Hello and welcome to another episode of The Advantage. I am your host, Michael Fiddle. Today is Tuesday, April 23rd, and on today's podcast, we are going to be breaking down every single NBA playoff games that we currently have odds for. We are recording this at halftime of Clippers Mavericks Game 2, so I think the only series that we will not be touching on as we work down a full slate playoff breakdown is Mavericks Clippers Game 3. We have two Game 2s left on tomorrow's Wednesday slate, Celtics Heat, Pelicans Thunder, and then a host of Game 3s as we switch home court advantage. And we get to learned a lot about the pricing of these things and how we are factoring them into our capping. I am joined by Drew Johnson, all that and more. Let's get it popping.
I'm the type to get shit done. You the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. I do and say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny in 10. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy. That's all that I need.
All right, everybody, welcome in. Before we officially get started, let me remind everyone to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever podcast platform you are listening to, and to sign up for the fiddlespicks.substack.com free gambling newsletter. And if you want to watch this podcast as a video, you could do it on the Fantasy Basketball International YouTube channel. I am joined by Drew Johnson, like third or fourth time on the pod. You guys should be familiar with him. He is our professional poker player, turned sports gambler, turned NBA color commentator with me. Drew, how you doing?
I'm doing excellent tonight. How are you, buddy?
Turned top chef against me in cooking competitions.
Doing
what
my
else
best.
We got on the docket?
I don't know. NBA picks against one another tonight, for instance.
Yeah, that's a shitty situation to be on. You're on the Mavericks, I'm on the Clippers. You look smarter than me right now. But let's start this
off. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, let's start this off with Heat Celtics tomorrow. My first question to you, is there any way left, based on the pricing of Game 2, to realistically bet Heat Celtics with an over-under of 203 and a spread of 14.5 or 15 points? Is this priced out, or are there ways we could still get in?
Personally, I like the over at this point now. I can see this game being over in the first half, and we just get a ton of garbage time with very little defense where the score just balloons a bit. The Heat just aren't going to have an answer for that Celtics team. It's pretty much that simple. I don't like betting a 15-point spread in the playoffs, though, just period. That's kind of that's just asking for trouble. You never know, right?
Yeah, generally in the NBA regular season, 15 is one of my favorite lines to bet into because it's a blindly profitable against the 52.38 cover rate. That's those statistics, guys, people who are listening. Drew knows this. The listeners don't. Those do not apply to playoff sets. When I start bringing in playoff data, it is different. When I'm going over regular season numbers, we're using regular season data. That's why I do a whole podcast called Five Tips for Playoff Betting and describe how things are changing and the changes of the key number scale and how we're playing into these things. We talk about more blowouts in the NBA playoffs, but that doesn't mean you're necessarily covering a minus 15 spread pregame more because it's already priced in. So these things do change. I'm kind of feeling the same way as you now, Drew, that maybe we're going over on this Celtics versus Heat game because I noticed Spoelstra in the press conference and in the media says that the Heat are hoping to correct the three-point discrepancy in Game 2. That the Celtics getting so many off, that's who they're going to be, Spoelstra says. He's like, we know we're not going to limit them to only 25 three-point attempts. We need to up ours and try and bring theirs down a little bit, but really we need to up our three-point quantity. This is a volume thing that Spoelstra's talking about. So you look at that and you say, okay, possessions are probably going to be a little bit quicker up and down the floor with that, and there's going to be more high-value shots. So I'm very much looking at an over, and I'm almost wondering, is this the time when we start to escalate a play and ladder it and sell points and play the over 203 or wait it out because it's dropping and we're going to be contrarian, right? Maybe we get a 202.5 And then are we playing over 206 and a half, over 210 and a half, over 214 and a half, over 218 and a half? Like, how far do we go? Because I'm thinking I wouldn't be shocked if one of these goes over 215 and just clears 215 as a total.
I could see that happening. I would be, it would really depend on the price you're getting. Like, up in that range, I'm actually curious. Do you have any of the lines up by chance?
Yeah, I'm going to pull them up right now. I generally, for the sake of this discussion, go to FanDuel when I'm looking at alt lines. I generally find that FanDuel has the best alt spreads when you are selling points and alt totals when you are selling points. I never look into that shit. Well, I mean, I have in the past, and that's why I learned that it was shit to look to buy points as insurance. But when you are selling points and you are trying to escalate a bet, generally FanDuel has the least hold in these markets and gives back this the max amount of money back to the bettor. So I'm looking at this now. To go over 217 and a half would be a plus 350. To go over 210 and a half would be a plus 182. To go over 206 and a half would be a plus 130. So you're getting 30%, 80% more, and then, you know, 250% more on the big one to really sell 5, 8, 15 points.
I mean, you could split it up where you put, like, if you were putting, say, one unit on the actual over at, like, say, 202, and then spread a half a unit, you know, over top of that up to, say, even 211 and a half plus 200.
Yeah, I see that right now. Yeah, that would be, yeah, maybe you just go to 211 and a half. I mean, I would be zero shocked if we had a 112-100 Boston Celtics win.
Yeah.
The question is, Miami, can Miami get to 100?
I think they can if they shoot well. Right. And, you know, it's going to be tough to shoot well against this team specifically. But at the same time, they know that the only way they have a chance is to do that. And so one of two things is going to happen in this game, realistically. Either they're going to get blown out in the first half because they don't hit threes. And then we get, you know, that typical blowout, lack of defense, second half, fourth quarter, that kind of thing where guys are just jacking shots and wide open threes, that kind of thing. And it does balloon the score to, say, a 120 to 90 or something like that, right? Like, or a 120 to 93.
Right.
And then you've hit your numbers, right? And if it doesn't go like that, and if the Miami Heat actually can score 100, then you're going over anyways. So
yeah,
the likelihood of this is pretty high.
We talked about this when I was on a recent episode of Buckets, the Action Network podcast recently, where we talked about laddering bets. And if you're going to, like, split it up into three sections, you were saying, like, hey, put 50% on the first number and then put, you know, 25-25. The way they said to do it on the Action Network, this was someone else's formula, was to go 60% on the straight up spread, 30% on your first ladder number, 10% on your second ladder ring. So you're, like, slowly scaling that up, but you're really baked into playing mainly the straight up number that you are getting, which goes back to our principles of capping, that though the best number that you can get is generally the VIG closest to minus 110. I also had a prop that I liked on this game, Drew. I considering this quote from Spoelstra in both directions, we want to shoot more threes and we want to try and limit more threes. I think Haywood Highsmith is going to be a guy that maybe gets a little bit increased run because of how efficient he is from three and how versatile he is on defense. So he's an underrated shooter and he's a great switch defender. So I saw the line for him to just make 1-3 at like minus 140. So I liked Haywood Highsmith to just make a three throughout the course of a game. If you like those player props, I go very small on player props because I don't cap them with the same type of tracking of CLV and opening lines. But if you're starting to tack on these basketball angles, I also think that's a nice way to attack this game.
So interestingly, his over under on points is only 5.5 at minus 115 approximately. But for him to hit 2 threes is plus 330. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, you'd rather play the 2 threes over the 5.5, right?
Because so maybe he's not you would getting to the basket too often, you would say, right?
not totally his game. I mean, he's got a pretty versatile game, but he fills the role that he's being asked to. And if you have Bam and Hawkes down there and Caleb Martin slashing, then yeah, you're going to have Highsmith more on the perimeter. And they have been non-committal to using Duncan Robinson. So I was looking at the Duncan Robinson to make 1-3. It's like, oh, are they going to need DR to come back in? Because they've done this. Spoelstra's done this with Robinson in years past where he's just not played him for numerous games and then comes back and gives him 26 minutes and the guy makes 7 threes. Yes. I'm just not going to bet into a minus 330 and like a 75% implied probability that he gets on the court when he's been getting so many DMPs or gets on the court for more than just a minute or two. So, you know, you could put those guys in garbage time when they get in 2 minutes left in the game, and that counts for their props when if they just were coach DNP, you'd get it voided for not checking in. So those kind of things are very interesting, but I was a little bit scared off of Duncan Robinson. The Haywood Highsmith was the lowest odds, so the least implied probability you are paying, and he's also a player that I like to target given the way that they're talking about this game. Do you have any qualms with the fact that I hit a minus 1250 money line?
No. I think that's a good bet, probably. How much did you lay? Like,
yeah, that's a great fucking question.
Was it 5% of your roll?
I laid 2.5 units. So just okay. Two. So that I wasn't even going to a 5%. That's 3% of my roll with a 1.2% unit to my bankroll exposure. So 2.5 units times 1.2% of my bankroll is 3% of my overall bankroll on the Celtics money line. But I just think a lot of people write back to me when I tweet these things, like, how could you play a minus 1250? What are you pairing it with? And I think it's like crazy dumb to start saying you can't play a minus 1250 money line straight. You don't have to bet 12.5 units to win one unit. You don't have to overexpose yourself. You could just bet one unit to bring home a tiny bit. You could bet 1.25 units to bring home a tenth of a unit. Those things are worth betting. If you can bring home 10% of a normal wager size on a Celtics money line, that's what you feel is the best way to attack this game, then go for it. The reason why I chose the money line, so that people can understand why I did what I did, we did not have a lot of information on Terry Rozier. And I thought there was a chance that Scary Terry was going to come back and play in game two. And if Scary Terry was deemed upgraded to questionable and then upgraded to probable and activated for game two, the spread was going to move a little bit and I'd be minus CLV in a big spread. I don't want to be playing a minus 15 when it's down to minus 12. If you are losing CLV while backing a favorite, that in a money line sense, that is the best place and least vulnerable spot to lose CLV and be on the wrong side of a number, because as long as they are remain the favorite, you still automatically have over a 50% chance of cashing that bet. So I said, okay, if Scary Terry is ruled out and he is out, then I know I'm getting the best number on this possible. And this 1250 goes out to 1600 minus 1800, right? So I wanted to get in early, but I was also baking in the insurance that if I was on the wrong side of the news, I didn't really care that much because I was still on a money line. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, I think that's a kind of a smart thing to do. The exposure amount is reasonable as well. I would even consider 4 or 5% on even this game. I just can't. Like, I know I'm going to look like an idiot if Miami does a Miami and just somehow pulls together. Like, it's not happening, guys. It just isn't.
No. This Miami Heat team is not the same Miami Heat team we've seen in past seasons. I mean, they don't have Jimmy Butler.
And 3 of the 4 guys on their squad right now don't have much playoff experience. Like, is this Terry Rozier's first playoffs? Second? Third?
It was when he was with Boston with a young Jason Tatum.
Exactly.
And he went nuclear and he brought the Boston Celtics to the conference finals when they shouldn't have been there. And now it's the Boston Celtics knowing that they should essentially be in the finals, putting the smack down on him. And when you're going up against Drew Holiday and Derek White, like, if you're going to insert Terry Rozier as your linchpin and he's been with the Miami Heat for 2 months since the deadline.
Yeah.
And yet he's got to go up against Derek White and Drew Holiday, which are both all defensive teams this year. Like, yeah. Good fucking luck. Give me the money line. Don't really care how it moves relative to the news, but yet I could have still beat the news drop and beat the CLV. It looks like I'll be floating in the middle, but I still like my ticket a lot and would recommend a Celtics money line for like a 3% exposure. Let's move on to Pelicans and Thunder, Drew. Line opened at 8 again. Thunder kind of came out a little bit scared in game one, a little bit nervous for their first playoff experience. And then they got it together and they got it rolling. Are the Pelicans a team that's going to put up a fight night after night? Or do we think that the Thunder start getting rolling and take care of the Pelicans where we could start backing -7.5s, -8s and playing them as a first round favorite system because they are the one seed going against the 8th seed. So it fits all the criteria of something we'd love to play. So I'm sitting here going, it's either Thunder or nothing for me, but I don't know if I want to back this team, you know, -7.5.
I wouldn't do that personally. First of all, you're on the wrong side of 7. So you can throw that in there right away. Secondly, I actually think the Pelicans match up okay against the Thunder. We saw this in the regular season when they had Zion and didn't have Ingram. And they played a game against one another. And the Thunder came out strong and put the smack down on them. And then the Pelicans slowly grinded them away with good perimeter defense and size inside. And I really like the game could go 10 different ways, in my opinion. Like you could have the OKC at home game 2 jitters out the way blowout. You could have the Pelicans are now know they're on. They need to pull one of these games out to have the best chance in the series. They're going to come back stronger. They're going to make adjustments and they only lost by 2. They have the size. They have more experience for sure. They have more guaranteed go-to plays in tight games. Kind of like, I know SGA is a great shooter and he can get to that mid range quite a lot, but getting a Jonas Valanciunas bucket down low or Brandon Ingram mid range shot is just as good as getting an SGA shot, right?
Yeah, and CJ McCollum has been lethal down the stretch of games in his career too. Like, that man is shifty and he can score in ISO. So in playoff formats, it's kind of the guy you want. I was zero surprised they tried to go to CJ at the end of the last game when the Thunder brought in Cason Wallace to defend him. I was like, yeah, you want to go to CJ in this spot because he's a little bit shiftier than BI to try and shake a defender and get to a spot. Just didn't drop. And that's why the Pelicans didn't take game 1. I kind of agree. I'm probably laying off this game. Feel the same way about the total. Feels like an over spot while it's moving under. And I probably just don't want to touch it. Sometimes when my opinions are contrarian to the market, I just stay away from it. I'm not going to bet the market and throw my opinion in the trash. I'm not going to bet my opinion and throw the market in the trash. Both are valuable. I like when they align. And here they don't. So we'll keep it moving. Drew, me and you are together on this. Cavaliers under Magic and under any number under 200. We were talking about this during game 2 as the pricing. We were predicting the pricing and we were saying, okay, we're going right away. It came up at 203. Did you grab it at 203? Because you said,
I think 202.5.
So you grabbed the smart 202.5. I waited until I saw for sure that it was moving down. And everything was under 200 except for Bet Rivers. And I picked off a 200.5. So I'm going to see what.
That's what it turns out I have too. I didn't get it fast enough.
Yeah. So,
back at my bet and it's only 200.5. But yeah,
Magic even score?
I mean, I think they'll score better in at home. But I also think that their defense against the Cavs is good enough to keep the Cavs below 100 as well. We've seen that. You know, the Cavs barely scored over 100 in the first game and were kept under 100 in the second game at home. So I expect this to be a tight game. I expect this to be, you know, 90-88. I'm leaning towards the Cavs myself. I think when push comes to shove, you need to be able to get a bucket in the playoffs, and the Orlando Magic can't.
They don't have the guys.
It's kind of just comes down to that sometimes. Like, Paolo's great, but he's going to get doubled. and he's going to have to pass out of it. And then somebody's going to look to take a three, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to close out like they have been doing all series. And they're going to drive into the lane, and they're not going to know what to do. Because that we've just seen that happen the entire game, first two games. Like it was, I turned the game off tonight because it was almost tough to watch.
The I hate what the Orlando Magic are doing in the coaching department. I've despised the starting of Jonathan Isaac and going away from Wendell Carter. Like, you were on Magic almost before the series saying, I kind of like what they're bringing into the series, but you didn't know that they were going to change their starting lineup to something that's played 30 minutes together the whole regular season. It's like, why do that? If you've acquired the five seed and you're a really tough team and Jonathan Isaac is almost your secret weapon off the bench that you could throw at people, and it's like a new look and it's so much energy all at once, to put Isaac out there when the other guys are also going to play with their max focus and energy too, and then to remove Wendell Carter and shift everyone's rotations and ways that they're playing with each other, I thought it was a really dumb move by Mosley. And then my reason for playing the under in game three ultimately was that Jalen Suggs seems like he's going to be available. So he went off, he was carried. I don't get this. I don't get how soccer has flooded the NBA recently, where all these guys look like, whether it's Joel Embiid, he looks like he tore his ACL. He looked like he scratched his cornea. We had, like, everyone looks like they're going to be out for multiple games, and then they pop right back up, and they're good to go the next game.
Grayson Allen tonight, and then he went back. He injured the same ankle tonight, but when he was playing, he looked absolutely fine. I was like, what is this? Like, I have, like, and if you watch that game tonight, you saw that the game really flipped sort of after he left. The spacing just wasn't there at all. And that was the same thing we saw at the tail end of the first game when he didn't come back.
Yeah, the Wolves just do not respect Royce O'Neal's spacing. But in terms of the Suggs situation, like,
you?
No, Suggs is such a on-ball defender, and he's kind of slow on offense, and he stays in the corner, and he stays on the perimeter. He's not the best shooter. He had a good shooting stretch towards the end of the season, but he's not a great shooter at this point in his career for the playoffs. So if Suggs was going to be out and we were going to replace him with a more full-time Cole Anthony, a more Gary Harris run, or more Markel Fultz, who's like very much going to push the ball, drive to the perimeter, and then find an option that makes for a quick shot, I thought the pace would have gone up without Suggs. So knowing that Suggs was going to come back was just like, okay, now I'm willing to play the under. And I think that's what dropped it another 2 points.
Yeah.
Okay.
That
let's
doesn't
go.
Surprise me.
Let's go to Knicks Sixers. I want to take this one from the start because I feel very strongly that this is a home team down 0-2 spot to play into. And that the 76ers smack the Knicks in game three. I know I've been, everyone who's listening to this pod is like, Fid's been so fucking slow to back the Knicks all year. And that's true, but I backed the Knicks in game two. Did it bite me in the ass? Yes, because I played the spread instead of the money line. But what I felt coming out of game two was, I actually thought it was the best way the Sixers could have lost. Now, everyone's going to say that they're so surprised to hear that because it was a devastating loss. They know they can beat this team. If the 76ers lost again by another, and they went into the fourth quarter down 7 or 8. If they were blown out in the second half and they end up losing that game by 12, the 76ers are defeated. They had the game in their hands.
Yes.
And if they get out to a strong start in Philadelphia back at home, the confidence will be through the roof for them to finish off one of these games. I have a really high degree in confidence in the 76ers in game three. And I also really love that they complained a ton about the officiating. We see it happen every year. One team's going to complain like hell about the bad calls, whether that's the Lakers doing it after D'Lo got slapped in the face, whether that's the 76ers legitimately trying to petition a playoff game. Like, what the fuck? That's not going to work. But you know what might work? Getting an extra call or two in the next game. So I think, like, it's a squeaky wheel gets the grease type of thing to say back the 76ers. But my question I'm going to throw to you, Drew, can we still play it at 4.5?
Yes, absolutely. I would expect at least a 5-point win. Like, it took at home for the New York Knicks a historic chain of events to beat this team last game. When Maxey hit that three with, like, what was it, 48 seconds left or something, I was like, oh, this is over. And it clearly wasn't. However, it very much should have been. And so many things happened. We've all seen the highlights by now that put this game in a very weird spot. And Philly is now, like, don't poke the bear, because they're waking up and they're winning this game. That crowd is going to be absolutely out of its mind. Out of its mind. And I fully expect this game to be 110 to 92 or something like that.
The Philadelphia crowd will be out of its mind. And just as risky as it is to back them, if they start off a little bit slow, you are going to hear the loudest boos that you've heard in any playoff game. If they're on the threat of going down 0-3, Philadelphia fans will literally start throwing their ketchup onto the floor. Like, there will be like some shit that rains down in that city. But I think the 76ers definitely get it done. It's another game that's been going down towards the under. All of them seemingly are. It's a kind of one I want to switch, stay away from, given I don't know the way the whistle's going to blow in that game. So I'm just on 76ers minus three. Let's go to LA, where now the Lakers are a team down 0-2 going against the best team in potential Western Conference title repeat, Denver Nuggets. Lakers have led both of these games. And if you study the, what now, 10 straight losses from the Lakers against the Denver Nuggets, the amount of times that the Lakers have had double digit leads in those games is staggeringly high to only turn around and end up losing all 10 of them. This is a statistical anomaly. The advantage to disadvantage ratio is more skewed than what it appears to be. However, it's kind of priced in a very fair spot where it's just Denver minus one, and you're not paying a minus 4.5 to back a team that's beat another team 10 times in a row. So I was like, do we play into LeBron as a home team down 0-2 that he's going to put on super his cape and be Superman and be the king and just come back and win one? Or are we Denver side, or just don't even play it at all? I've been very confused on a flat market Lakers Denver game three.
My suggestion for this one is don't bet it, but definitely watch it.
The games are fucking amazing.
Like 100%. I don't care how much money you have on any other game. This is the game you tune into tomorrow night. Like it is going to be epic. Either we're getting an all-time LeBron James performance or we're getting an all-time Denver performance. This just has the makings of, so I'm not betting this in order to not ruin how much I'm going to enjoy it.
Okay, how do you feel about my take that LeBron James is still the second best player that you would want in a playoff series? I know he's going against number one, but if we're going to go down the list of like who else would you want in a playoff series? You want Luka, who just lost to a Kawhi-less Clippers? You want Giannis, who's not out there against the Pacers, and the Bucks are still winning a game without him? Like, who else do you want besides Bron? Do we want Embiid? Do you guys really want Tatum, who doesn't make a basket in the last 5 minutes? Do you want Kevin Durant, who's getting bullied right now by the Wolves? The question really becomes, do you want Ant-Man right now?
No.
Or do you want LeBron? And Ant has never won a playoff series. I feel like I'm screaming at Gibby because me and him have this talk all the time.
I'm actually racking my brain right now trying to think about this. And
LeBron is still,
I think you might
two.
Be right. Like, I think you might just be right. I don't know.
Boom. He's the king. Please reach out to me if you feel any different. And if you are going to tell me Jalen Brunson, now don't reach out to me. Okay. Let's go on that list. Because all the people think it's Jalen Brunson.
I'm literally speechless because I don't really have an argument for you. We haven't seen Giannis.
We've seen Giannis miss playoff games in three consecutive seasons. So
Butler's not playing. So, like, who's left? Like, the best performances have been Joker and LeBron, realistically. Do you know who's been going off?
Anthony
Davis. Backed him the last time we were on the
Siakam. Is it Siakam?
Siakam, man.
We have to talk about Siakam. Let's actually just start segueing over to this Pacers Bucks game, because the consensus of Lakers Nuggets is watch the game, don't bet it. That's kind of seems like the way we're both gonna go. Siakam is like, we are going right back to Siakam props if Giannis is out.
I'm curious how high it'll get. Game one, we had the over on his 22.5. He scored 35. I think he beat that tonight. I think he scored like 37. And hit the over under tonight was
24.5 tonight.
So when I looked, it was 25.5. And I was like, ooh, I was also of the opinion that like we weren't going to see big games from both him and Dame again. I really thought there would be adjustments made on both sides. And apparently that just didn't happen. So, like, classic Doc Rivers just didn't make an adjustment there, you know? Like, maybe let's double the guy who has cooked Bobby Portis on every single back-to-the-basket, 5 feet away play since, you know, game one, minute one.
Can I tell you the way to do that? Is you have to pull one of your perimeter defenders off of Nembhard or Nesmith and let them shoot threes.
Yeah.
You have to make Nembhard or Nesmith make their shots and pull someone from the perimeter down onto Pascal, because Brook Lopez can't be the guy because he's in the corner with Miles Turner. So you're either going to put Lopez as the main defender on Siakam, which I don't think is going to work because Siakam's too quick.
Yes.
So the correction is to put like Malik Beasley or Dame on Nembhard or Nesmith, whoever's the worst shooter. They have two similar names and they're like, the way they play the game is too similar that I'm like, I don't know which one's which when I'm talking on a podcast and I don't watch enough Pacers games, but I do know that the Bucks are playing them incorrect in the way that they're defending them. So the question becomes a fewfold. How do we feel about the spread of Pacers -4.5 going back to Indiana? Are we back in on a Siakam prop? Is it dependent on if Giannis is there or not? And then I have questions on the series price. So let's stay with the Siakam props. Does it matter if Giannis is back? Does that get you off of a Siakam prop?
Yes, it does, actually.
I agree.
I think that if there's one guy in the Bucks who can guard him one-on-one, it's Giannis. And
who then becomes fast enough to close from the perimeter where Miles Turner might be to actually help out.
Yep. Absolutely. So, okay. I think Giannis can definitely change that matchup. The issue is Giannis also just slows the pace down quite a lot for that team. And Indiana is just going to continue to push the pace. And Indiana's really, really rebounding well. They've got a lot of size. They've got a lot of speed. And I think that's kind of a lethal combination for this Milwaukee team, even if Giannis is playing. And if he's playing, we've seen this before, those calf injuries, probably not going to be 100%. Like, 80% Giannis good enough for them to beat this Pacers team at home? I don't think so. Certainly not in game three. Maybe when they're desperate in game four and have had a run with Giannis. But that's if he even plays.
That's the kicker. I actually think 80% Giannis, no matter where you are, is probably what brings the Bucks over the top to be able to beat the Pacers. I think -4.5 as the spread number that comes out, that's an indication right now on FanDuel that Giannis likely out for game three. Yeah. Still, we've heard that it was more serious, like 2 weeks to a full month type of timeline for him. So we're not at those dates yet. We're starting to get closer to the 2 week mark. So maybe we start to hear more reports. It's a situation where I don't think it's going to go out to the five or more, Drew. We could watch the market and see if it does. It has the potential to come back the other way if Giannis does play. But I think I do like Pacers. I think I do like Siakam props again, like up to 26.5, like probably 25.5.
You might have to eat some juice.
No, they're not going to be listed yet. And then my last question is, I have a Pacers 500-1 NBA Finals ticket placed on June 16th. There's pictures of it on the Twitter of other people's that I've recommended it to that are like to win $50,000. There's some big ass payouts, even $100,000 on a $200 500-1 bet. There are some big ass payouts on some Pacers futures, 500-1 and I really think I'm not going to hedge it. I think I'm just, I haven't touched it yet. I haven't played a Bucks series price. I think Bucks series price, I'm going to pull it up right now. They're going to now be the underdog. So you'd only have to hedge off of it with a single unit. So I still think I'm going to let it ride.
I would too.
Hedging is inherently minus EV. We don't want to do it because if it's 500 to one and we hedge it, okay, maybe we lose the hedge. Now we're in for two units. We go to the next series. They're playing the winner of Knicks Sixers. It's going to be fair. I'm going to kind of want to gauge it out. I'm going to really want to hedge when they get to the Celtics.
Yeah.
And I'm going to want to hedge. And I'm going to want to hedge with 20 units, right?
Yeah.
And take down that potential 500 to one and say, now I'm using the profit that I was going to make off this to slam the Celtics in the series and create a cushion that I, God forbid, the Pacers actually beat the Celtics and I was 20 units in the hole with a potential 500 to one on the back end. I could then martingale the whole thing in the finals and cover it all back.
Yeah.
So, you know, then you're betting 100 units on the next thing to win if the Pacers are, you know, minus or plus 400 and whatever on Denver. You're putting 100 units to win 20 on a minus 500 Denver type of thing to cover your loss. So you have to really understand how those hedges are going to affect your future outlook on this ticket. And my hope is to let this Indiana Pacers ticket ride as long as possible. And I hope that I'm playing it like kind of game to game in the next round and then series price Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. That would be a beautiful thing. Last one that we need to talk about is Wolves versus Suns, game three back in Phoenix. I messaged you during the game. Is this a Suns slam spot in game three? And then I watched the second half unfold and I was like, I don't know. I'm not too sure about that. That's the Wolves exactly came out and ate them. They beat them with their physicality. They're destroying them in the paint. They're protecting the rim. And if the Suns are going to take mid-range jumpers, they're going to lose.
Yeah. I thought that, once again, we already touched on this earlier, but the Grayson Allen injury is a big deal. Phoenix just has no depth. And Minnesota has tons of it. Just tons of it. Like McDaniels tonight was unreal. What did he end up with? Like 26-8 or something like that. Like he was phenomenal. So if your role players are going to play like that, and mind you, they're not probably not going to play like that on the road, but you look for Ant to have a bounce back game, right? And if Phoenix can't space the floor and they're just running pick and rolls between Booker and Beal against, you know, Gobert and Reed, like, yeah, they're going to get to the rim every once in a while for two, but they're going to not make all of those baskets. Like Gobert is going to be able to recover sometimes. Reed's going to be able to recover sometimes. And when that happens, they're just out. Like the fast break is on the way because they have zero rebounding. Like I really thought Nurkic was going to be super important in this series and he doesn't have the size to compete. So if he doesn't, nobody does. And they're getting killed on the boards.
So Nurkic was a minus 21 in today's game. Even though he came out and rebounded well. And then the craziest thing in this box score as I go through it, it's always good to watch the game and then see what you learn in the box score as opposed to the other way around. The box score shows that the Wolves starters, the two least scoring players in their starting lineup were Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards. 12 for Cat, 18 for Edwards. And the rest of them scored a ton more. McDaniels, Conley, Gobert. Oh, no, 15 for Edwards. And then you get 18 for Conley and Gobert. 25 for McDaniels. Good luck to the Suns. It's kind of the same way I feel Lakers. Like, I kind of don't want to touch this game at all. Switching the home court, back to Phoenix. The Wolves team, they're young and they are kind of playoff inexperienced. I know Gobert's had his moments, but he's not their like veteran leader and their like offensive leader that you're going to give the ball to in a big moment. He's going to play great defense regardless
and lead them on defense, but yeah,
right, exactly. But like I don't trust their youth to get a first, you know, crack on a road game and try and put a series away and go up 3-0, but I don't trust the Suns to back them, so I'm kind of like stay the fuck away from that one too.
Yeah, I don't see it's again, the theme throughout the stay away games is any game that you see that has three or four different outcomes that are equally likely, just don't bother. You know, when you see an outcome that's 70% likely, that's where you want to hammer a bet, right? But you could see Minnesota, this the same thing playing out that has played out the last two games. I could see Phoenix blowing them out at home, you know, and just hitting every shot.
Phoenix up 3-1 in the regular season series. So like, let's not forget that.
Yeah.
Although the Wolves are up, you know, 2-0 right now, they took the two games at home. Playoffs don't start until you lose a game at home. That's what they all say. And but like the Suns were favorites in this series and won 3-1. So I'm not totally done with the Phoenix Suns having a chance in this series. What I want to talk about, I have a few more questions for you, Drew, and then we're going to get out of here. What is more likely to happen? The Celtics lose tomorrow in a one-off game scenario, or the Magic end up winning the series over the Cavaliers? Who has a bigger chance to lose? The Celtics in a one-off game against Miami, or the Cavaliers in their series up 2-0 against the Magic?
The Celtics one-off game. I think that just the variance in one game is going to be higher than the Magic winning four of the next five with having to win at least one of them on the road. I think that, yeah, just pure odds.
So if I played Celtics minus 1250, why am I not playing Cavaliers series minus 800?
Touche.
Okay. My next question is, if we are going to back the Philadelphia 76ers in a slam spot in game three, and they're going to bring the series back to 2-1, should we also be playing them plus 375 in the series if they're going to come back to 2-1 and be at home?
I would say no. Literally only because of Embiid's health. Like, if he falls down wrong in minute three of next game, that bet is just a complete loss.
Yep. Because we know the 76ers are literally so bad without Embiid.
They would have zero shot at beating this Knicks team without Embiid. Zero.
Okay, I feel the exact same way, which is why my thinking right now, and I already have a 76ers 15-1 Eastern Conference future, so I don't need to add on more series prices with them. I do have a Cavaliers minus 1.5 games ticket, but it's only for half a unit and it's at plus odds, so I'm very little exposure in it that I might like, let me add on another 1.5 units on the minus 800 line. Obviously I'm not bringing home much return, but I can now up my exposure because I'm not overly risk, and I feel like the read, as I've been backing the Cavaliers the whole time, has been spot on.
I would agree with you.
Clippers up 1 going into the fourth quarter, my friend. All right, let's quickly review what we are saying that we like on this pod, and then any parting thoughts from you, and then we'll get out of here. We are looking at over 202.5 for the Miami Heat Boston Celtics game, where then we would even consider laddering up our bet with some selling points and taking over 208.5, 211.5 was plus 200. Those are the things that we looked at, a little 60-30-10 split as you ladder those three bets up. Pelicans versus Thunder. It is Thunder or nothing for me, and we're kind of leaning towards the nothing. Me and Drew are both on the under 200.5 in the Cavaliers and the Magic. Drew is on the Cavaliers to still win the game, and I am still probably going to tack on a Cavaliers to win the series in addition to my Cavaliers series minus 1.5. We are both on Philadelphia 76ers to get a big win in game 3. We are not touching the Denver Nuggets versus Lakers game, but we'll be watching every second of it. Pascal Siakam props back to the well if Giannis is out. Pacers likely again if Giannis is out. Not hedging any of that Boston Celtics ticket and not touching really anything in Timberwolves Suns. Did I kind of sum that up perfectly at the end? Do you feel like we need to add anything else?
The only thing I'd add is maybe limit your exposure on that Siakam prop, as he did just go off two games in a row, and even Doc Rivers can make adjustments after two games, right? Or does it take him three? I can't remember.
He actually makes adjustments for the first four to go up 3-1, oh, and then he throws them all out and then loses three games straight.
Well, he's just trying to get to the golf course a little quicker this year, you know? Just get out of here.
As we keep on Doc Rivers, his former player Tyrese Maxey was just crowned most improved player. Do you agree or disagree with the Tyrese Maxey most improved player award?
I disagree. I don't think he was considerably better than he was last year. I think he just got more opportunity with the ball with Embiid missing half the season.
Who should have been the most improved?
I don't really have another horse in the game. I just know that Maxey is not it.
Okay, so... Maybe. I'm fine with that. People are replacing Maxey with Kobe White, and I'm like, Kobe White also had a huge usage bump without. If you look at the, like, we have a statistics called usage rate. If you look at the percentage usage rate increase from Maxey last year to this year, and Kobe White last year to this year, it's literally like identical. They each went up about 4.5% in their usage rates. So quell that nonsense. I'm okay if people believe that Kobe White made the jump from bench warmer to, you know, bona fide starter that you could trust. Maxey made the jump from, you know, star to all-star to, you know, number two on a team. It's a matter of opinion which one you think are a bigger improvement. I'm fine with that. I think the other candidates that if we're not going to give it to Maxey or Kobe White is like, yes, yeah, could you consider a Sengun who had a breakout year but then got injured? Do you consider a Kuminga who had a breakout second half of the year? Do you consider a Jalen Williams in OKC who became a fucking stud? Jalen Johnson in Atlanta?
You could even argue last 8 weeks of the season, Jalen Green.
You could even argue last 8 weeks of the season, Victor Wembanyama.
Oh yeah, like the problem is what is he improving from? But like, if you looked at his like the first half of his season as a season and the second half of his season as a season, I would definitely agree with you there.
Yeah, because Wemby went from rookie to superstar.
Oh yeah, Wemby went to I'm gonna take the Denver Nuggets number one seed away from them this year. Like, what the fuck? How does somebody do that? One Not Wemby. Even LeBron can do it.
I got one Wemby question for you, then we're actually out of here. All right. I said Wemby's ideal teammate was Anthony Edwards in like terms of age and whatever. Who is, I guess it's not really a Wemby question. I was having this discussion with Gibby like an hour ago. If we would dream of Wemby and Ant together, then who do we pair Luka with to then go against them for years to come? Because you have to assume it's going to be, you know, 5 years from now because Ant's 22 and Wemby's, you know, 19 or 20. So it's like when they're going to be 27, 25. So who do we pair with Luka to make a run at Wemby Ant potential teams if we're doing this fantasy draft style?
SGA?
I don't think you'd want someone so ball dominant.
I think they would play off each other very well, as we've seen Irving and Luka play. I'm just trying to come up with like young guys who would complement Luka's skill set the best.
You just need like an absolute sniper from three, like prime Klay Thompson type.
Yeah, that would be good.
Like someone who's so lethal on defense and is just a sniper from the catch and shoot machine. My guy, Desmond Bane.
Oh, that'd be good. That would be nice.
All right, we could stew on it and
I don't know if there is a combo that can beat Ant and Wemby though. Like, are we kidding around here? Like, Wemby is already godly, and Ant is definitely on the path to be godly as well.
And likewise, it's kind of been difficult for not only us but everyone around the league and Dallas management to decide who are the ideal Luka teammates. It's been hard to say what's the perfect co-star to a guy like that. Is it a Porzingis, who's a stretch four? No, that didn't work. Is it just a rim running big who could set hard screens? Okay, but you could find a lot of those a lot cheaper. Then you can then redistribute the money elsewhere. Is it a guy like Kyrie? But then anytime Kyrie's doing things, you're taking the ball out of Luka's hands. It's a lot easier to pair Ant and Wemby together and make that work.
I have a question. Is Luka now like 2017 LeBron, where you just, without the defense though, let me make that
so what clear. You mean is 2019 Harden?
No, he's better. He's a better, well, maybe he's it's just because he's bigger and he has that back to the basket game is why I want to make the LeBron comparison a little more. And I actually think he's a better passer than Harden is, which is kind of saying something considering what we've seen Harden do this season specifically. Yeah. But is it just Kyrie Irving and three shooters? Like,
is
three?
Is it Chet Holmgren?
That might be a good bet. If Chet puts on, 40 pounds, it's Chet. You need, because you need a little size on him to compete with Wemby. Like Wemby, you don't want any more size on him because he's just big enough already, and he's so long and lanky that you want him to really keep as much pressure off of that whole system as you possibly can. But he's probably strangely heavy for how he looks because of he's just that long and that big.
And durable, and he came through huge in that final moment last year. Played 82 games last season and had five blocks and, three threes, two threes in his first playoff game. Like, okay, bye, Chet.
Are the odds out for Defensive Player of the Year yet next year?
For next year? Why, are we already taking Wemby?
Yeah. Yes, we are. Like 100%.
He's going to be the odds-on favorite, likely, and I'm probably going to take Gobert because of it, if there's any value.
I know you would do that, but...
Yeah, that's just the
I
way.
I think
it's
you
the
got
way
it. Like, it's going to... well, I guess you hedge on the injury, but, if he's healthy, just pencil it in for the next 5 years.
Yeah, the question is, does Wemby end up over-under, more or less, career Defensive Player of the Year than Gobert?
Oh, over.
Yeah, because I think Gobert's about to get his fourth right now.
Yeah, no, Wemby's getting five before he's 27. Are you kidding me?
No, he's taking five of the next 7 years. As long as he stays healthy,
he is. Did you watch him this year? I don't even know. I cannot emphasize enough that the stuff I saw from that guy is otherworldly, literally. We've never seen anything like it, and he's got the clutch gene. Oh my god.
And he wants the big moment, and he likes the rivalries, and he wants to play, and he wants to compete. You see him, the only reason why that him and Ant combo is not going to work, and it's the perfect way to get off this, we know they don't really get along because Ant wasn't taking the All-Star Game skills competition as serious enough as Victor, because Victor wanted to win the dribble shoot and pass contest, and Ant didn't give a shit because that shit doesn't matter. All right. Thank you guys for everyone for tuning in. Thank you for Drew for being here. We were missing our third compadre, Mike Levy, tonight. He will be back with us next week. The three of us have been crushing it. I mean, this is our now third pod together. We swept the first one and absolutely dominated the second one. So let's hope that we got another one in store. Plenty of more from this playoff trio as we go through the next few rounds. Thank you guys for tuning in. And as always, peace out.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.